latest issues.
Oh, yeah.
Land Use Committee meeting, Tuesday, June 5th. Who won't be attending is absent, is Councilman Holland. In attendance, we have Councilman Smiley, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Co-Chair Tackett, Councilman Bell, Councilman Street, Councilman Powers, Councilwoman Diller, Councilman Cartier, my aide, Chrissy Roberts, and myself, Joe Retta.
Motion approved minutes of May 15th Land Use Meeting.
All in favor?
Second.
Forget the second.
Somebody said second.
I said second.
That was Don Janet does. I don't even try anymore. I can't beat her.
But on the floor, it's like half the time nobody seconds.
Well, Dave used to.
And Phil Tansy used to be my backup, and he really dropped that ball big time.
Okay, we have a resolution here. It's to rename a non-residential subdivision recorded as Odessa Campus to Fairview Campus. Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As per title.
Second.
I mean, it's, that's it.
Aye.
Okay.
Hey, I'll co-sponsor, right?
Okay.
Okay. Councilman Powers. All right, number two on the agenda. We have rename a residential subdivision recorded as Little Falls Village 2 to Centerville Point. Councilwoman?
New builder. It's been approved by Public Safety, Fire Marshal, and the Post Office as per title.
Okay. Any questions? Anything from the public? Okay. Moving along. Next, we have ordinance 11-077. It's the rezoning of St. George's 100, south side of Boyd's Corner, to the west side of 13, north of Ray Lag Road in Middletown. Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have John Tracy here today, legal counsel for the applicant, and would you both like to make a presentation?
Well, that's true.
I apologize in advance for my voice. I've been going to the Phillies game in 59-degree weather and short sleeves to not help me last night.
You didn't feel it though, did you?
Of course I did. I knew I had to be here the next time.
You didn't feel the weather.
Good afternoon. John Tracy from Young Conway, Stargardt & Taylor here on behalf of the applicant. With me is Charles Owensby, who's the developer. Seated behind the board, because I guess he's being shy, is Mark Russo from Vandermark & Lynch. This project has had several stops and starts in the process, but it arrives before you with a favorable recommendation of the Department of Land Use, as well as a 7-1 favorable recommendation from the Planning Board. The property itself is approximately 63 acres in size. After tinkering with different designs, we settled on the design in front of you, which below it in the CR portion has approximately 135,000 mixed between office space and commercial. It's a little over 100,000 commercial. The remainder office, 115 small single family lots. We arrived at this design. Mr. Owensby is the developer of Crosland and Canal View at Crosland. He's had great success with this lot size. It seems to be what the market's asking for. So that is how we settled on this ultimate design. There will be interconnection, as you can see, between the commercial aspect and the residential aspect. There's also proposed interconnection to this point up here, which is right now residual lands from the Bayberry development. There's also the ability to do a cut through onto Gray Lag Road should this property owner decide that they no longer want to own their property. Both this parcel and this parcel would be out parcels retained by the original owners of these properties. Those are not part of any rezoning application. They would remain with their existing zoning classification. Three entrances are proposed, a full signalized entrance at this point, as well as rights in and rights out further west on, or east on Boyd's Corner, and a rights in, rights out on Route 13. As council is aware, this is a rezoning, so we have to satisfy the rezoning standards. Those standards are discussed in some detail in the department and planning board's report. I will note that this proposed development is consistent with the comprehensive development plan. This is the new community development area. It's also a level one, level two investment area for the state strategies. It's estimated densities proposed for this area under the comp plan are 3 to 5 units an acre. The gross density here is at the low end of that. It's 3.1 acres. In addition, it is surrounded by commercial properties on this entire frontage on DuPont Highway extending over Boyd's Corner Road as well as the Graylag Road intersection here. There is also a commercial development here. My belief is the property across the street, the Huber property, was actually rezoned to commercial in the 1990s, early 2000s, although Dave Culver can correct me if I'm wrong. It's presumed to comply with the comp plan based on the fact that it's in the new community development area as new development. But again, as I just discussed, there's similar zoning types around us, mixed-use zoning types with the Bayberry community to the back, as well as commercial along the front. Suitability of the property, it's perfectly suitable, as the department indicated in its report, for the proposed development. We're not seeking any variances. We also don't believe there's any negative effects because the property itself is bordered by 3 roadways, 2 of which are significant, Boyd's Corner and DuPont, which has been expanded to 6 lanes in this area. I was advised at 10 after 2 this morning that the commercial property across 10 after 2 this evening, this afternoon, I wasn't awake at 10 after 2, that the commercial property across the street might have some issues with this, which I guess I find a little shocking because they showed up at the original 2009 hearing we had with comments for the good of the order. They did not attend or comment at the 2011 hearing. One can presume it's they don't want to see commercial development across the street from them, but as the discussion in the department's report indicates, this is an area that the county has looked at as being a commercial corridor, so that beyond this and the Bayberry Town Center, folks wouldn't have to go all the way to Middletown or otherwise for their commercial needs. And obviously the interconnection between this residential community and our commercial, as well as the potential interconnection with whatever happens at Bayberry as well, would help in that regard. Given that my voice is about to run out, I'll stop at this point and see if you have any questions.
Okay, before we get started, do a little cleanup. Councilman Weiner, I can't ask you if you wanted a question because you're not here yet, but now you are. Councilman Smiley?
I'm just curious, since you said the commercial property across the street may have a problem with it, is there a Lowe's anywhere involved in this?
I don't think either side is proposing one that big, but I think their commercial development's about 120,000 mixed between various pad sites. Ours is about 100,000 with an additional about 30,000 of office.
Just had a flashback, I guess.
You and me both. I had the same one at about 210.
And we have Council President Kovac. Councilman Bell?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I just want to acknowledge for the record that I did take the time to meet with the applicant, the developer, as well as legal counsel, and reviewed over the plan. I had some questions that were answered. I reviewed the plan in much detail as I normally do. And I can say this, that at this point in time, we have received no adverse communication from any of the neighboring properties. In fact, when I take a look at this plan as far as and meeting and having a few of the questions answered, is that this is in the central core. It's in the growth zone. It has significant infrastructure along the as far as the highways and roadways that that border it, both up at 896-01 Boyd's Corner Road, Graylag Road, and DuPont Highway. To take infrastructure further, the Boyd's Corner Road intersection as well as the Bayview Crossing intersection have all been upgraded and improved by DLDOT over the past several years. So those intersections have received improvements. It has a fire station within about a half mile from the, in fact, probably less than a half mile, probably about a quarter of a mile. But if you look at the residential area, it could be about a half mile. Bus transportation, DART, there's no direct bus stop there at this point in time, but there's a park and ride on the opposite side of Delaware Route 1, which is very well used by everyone. In looking at the plan and looking at the that particular section of Route 13 corridor, it seems to make a lot of sense. And you know, it's got interconnectivity. It's got a berm in between the commercial retail area and the community area, a permanent berm. And so really, that's, you know, from the district standpoint, we've received no adverse comments from the neighboring. I did receive a call from Scott Wilcox, who is here today, who represents Ubers Crossing, and voiced some concern, and is here today to voice their concern. So with that.
Thank you. Councilman Weiner?
Thank you. I was pleased, unprompted, to learn about the bus aspect and also to learn about interconnectivity. Wanted to focus in on the pedestrian interconnectivity with a little more specificity, both within the site and as between the site and other roadways or uses in the area.
This property is essentially bordered on three sides by roadways. It's bordered by Boyd's Corner Road and Graylag Road here, as well as Route 13 to its east. I don't know what DLDOT's plans are, although I would suspect with signal agreements that would have to be entered into, that certainly crosswalks and pedestrian crosswalks may be possible. As you can see from the design, though, there is interconnectivity between the commercial and the residential sidewalks as well. I think there was discussion about maybe putting another sidewalk connection through there, but right now it's not being shown because people don't usually like when sidewalks go between their property lines. There's the old DART stop here. That DART stop has been moved maybe a quarter mile to the other side of Route 1 is the parking lot facility that exists.
Project similar to this in my district, I sort of lobbied before there were homes for pedestrian interconnectivity with Tuckaway. Once the homes come, although the folks will appreciate it and use it, once the homes come, they would object to it. So it would be my hope, and from a land use perspective, that you could have pedestrian interconnectivity running along one of the property lines.
You're talking internal?
Yeah, internal.
We have it right here.
Right, to connect to the shopping center so that folks won't have to feel inhibited, you know, if it's muddy, to get into their car to drive to a shopping center that's literally right next door to where they live.
It's Charles Owensby, the developer.
We actually have had prior conversations with DLDOT about designing and working with them on their multimodal path to bring that along the connectivity that John Tracy was showing, and also I know DLDOT was talking about following that through with also crosswalks to get folks to be able to get over to the park and ride as well. So that's something we'll continue to pursue.
Thank you for your proactiveness and your sensitivity to pedestrian friendliness. Wanted to ask, your 3.1 units per acre?
That's the gross density.
Okay. And that's on the low end, of course, of the 3 to 5.
Correct.
DUs per acre in an area such as this.
We had explored other design types, and you run into some issues when, of course, you're talking about a prominent area where there's not as much small lot right around it. But beyond that, it gets to the point where you're trying to stick too much into one area.
No, I understand you have to balance between what are the other uses in the area, as well as the fact that it's designated as an investment area.
And the small single-family homes really do seem to be, from the residential side, something that we've been very successful. We actually did some modifications, as Councilman Bell knows, to the Crosland plan, to actually pull some attached housing out of that and replace it with smaller single-family homes.
Good. Thank you.
Councilman Cartier.
Yes, I really like this community design where you have, you know, residential homes in close proximity to commercial. And, you know, this is very reminiscent of Fairfax to me, up in Brandywine 100, where the Fairfax development is in the back and you have the commercial out in front. And I think it's a very successful type of design, and it's going to be a very desirable community from that standpoint, when you also factor in all the pedestrian amenities to make it easy for people to just walk over to the store. And then you also have the bus service. So, you know, I really like this kind of design, and I wish more of the southern Newcastle County was built, you know, in that kind of fashion, rather than, you know, having a housing development, you know, very remote from any other supporting amenities that you need, meaning you got to get in a car and drive some distance. So this really adds to a lot of convenience and, I think, sustainability, livability.
Well, that was the discussion that we had with Councilman Bell, because there's an old hotel here that has a small commercial plan approved for it. There's a Wawa and a small strip center over here. The Hubert Crossing folks, my understanding is they just got their record plan approved for commercial over here, about 120,000 square feet plus or minus. And then there's a Walgreens and some other commercial down here. It's kind of formed the area of a commercial node for this point, because then you have Bayberry in between, and then you get all the way to Middletown. But as Councilman Bell was discussing, for the people that live in this area and that are coming to this area, Middletown or the Wawa Odessa are about, excuse me, the Odessa Wawa are about the two options that you have right now. And we, you know, I know people folks might be concerned about competition, although I don't think this council has ever said, well, if you get in for your rezoning, we're forestalling other rezonings here. But they also have the benefit of probably being at least 2 years ahead of us in terms of being able to market to tenants, because we, assuming we successfully complete this aspect, have to complete the rest of the land use process, which is not sure.
Councilman Smiley.
Not my plan, not my district. Councilman Weiner, I appreciate your passion. Just so clear for future, when it comes to putting the pedestrian pathways between the people's homes, this council heard constituents of mine who came before it, who are currently in violation of the county code because they put fences across it because of the vandalism and the safety issues and all they had with people hanging outside their homes. So, again, no good deed, you know, there's a punishment, but this is yours. Just so we understand, when it's the 7th district, no thank you.
Yeah. Councilman Sheldon.
I get that.
John, what is approximately the cost of the small end of the housing, and you have different types, what's the high end?
I'm going to defer to Mr. Owensby, because he's been dealing with one home builder building these similar houses at Crosland. All these lots are, by and large, roughly 6,600 square feet. Mm-hmm. About 60 by 110.
So like the old NC 6.5?
Yeah, exactly. Pretty close to that. If you introduce yourself again for the record.
Yeah, Charles Owens with Woods Corner Farm. It would be the expectation, for instance, if this were going to market today, that the selling price of the single would probably be $250 to $300 in that range.
And that's, you have different type. What is the small square footage?
The square footage
to the top,
like to be probably 2,000 to
2,600. At 2,600, okay. I also want to voice, I agree. You know, this now, this is Sherwood Park 2's, the Meadowwoods, the kind that I think we should get, we've been talking amongst ourselves, I'm just speaking for myself, to get back into. I think this is what we've been looking at. I live in a development, it's NC5, and you know, the old Meadowwoods, and that's what they're going for, around 250 or so, two-car garage, 2,000 square foot, so I think that's what we got to get back to, is this kind of, you know, just that is just detached townhomes and stuff like that.
Councilman Powers.
Yeah, you brought up something. First thing, just to correct you, there isn't an Odessa Wawa, there's only Middletown Wawa.
Okay.
Because Middletown is annexed all the way to Odessa. There's a Sunoco.
Which I patronize frequently.
But, you know, one thing that's been brought up by Councilman Bell and I, and something needs to work out, and this has nothing to do with
that,
is it needs a gas station up there, and somehow we need to figure out environmentally how it can be done. It's kind of funny when you say the Hubert. It was both sides of the road. It ended at that hedgerow. It's the same property at one time. But the other farms in Bullen, which was a small part of Grand New Farms, which was the major part of their farm. But things change. I mean, there is. I mean, when they built Grand View Farms out in the middle of wherever, that changed the whole thing.
Councilman Street.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Nothing, having nothing to do with the developer. And Councilman Warner, I'm really not trying to pick a fight today. I'm just giving my 2 cents. You know, I know everybody at the table probably has more knowledge, insight in the land use and smart growth and all those things pertaining there to the Nadja. But I do read the police reports. And I'm looking at more and more pedestrian accidents, bicycle accidents, and with those things going on, and you know, we're having difficulty stopping folks from running around and driving under the influence, and then we got the doing smart growth or whatever kind of growth in places that don't have a whole lot of light. So I understand your passion, and I'm not going to knock anybody's passion. I'm just saying I have some genuine concerns about safety as relates to, you know, conceptually what may be good on paper and principle may differ in various locations as relates to what's good practice. So that's just a genuine concern. Again, I'm not, had nothing to do with you, and I'm not trying to pick a fight. I'm just giving my 2 cents. I'm in and out.
Councilman Powers?
Yeah, I had one more. Just kind of going on what George said. Interconnectivity, are no problems following the streets, but when you start putting them through with a lot of the subdivisions that I have or I had, which some of you will be inheriting, the problems are these connecting in between going behind houses and stuff. So I don't have a problem walking, but we can go, we'll go to those neighborhoods. You might not want to get out of the car, especially looking in a suit right now, but I'm not being smart, but I'm telling you, just, you know, it was nice when it was first built, but it turns into problems.
Anything else from council?
Yeah, I just want to agree with all the speakers, and I understand that one size doesn't fit all, and they're different kinds of neighborhoods.
Anything from the public? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Peggy Schultz, and I'm representing the League of Women Voters for Catholic County. I appreciate that the applicant mentioned the level of in terms of state strategy. And if we could also point to the, it's in levels
it. I mean,
1 and 2. And if you could point to it. Thank you. Ms. White.
Okay, anybody figured the word out yet?
And may I speak in terms as private citizen Schultz? I appreciate the interconnectivity that is expressed, and I'd like to, as Councilman Weiner said, one size doesn't fit all, and it's not always appropriate. But I live in a place where my back deck is about 20 feet from a path, and we just love it. We love it because, you know, we can wave to the people and they wave to us, and we put our flowers out and they like the flowers, and it just really develops a sense of community.
I get robbed.
But you know, this may not be appropriate in this case. I do also live a few miles away from a development where that is adjoining a little shopping center, Lantana. I don't know, it's not Lantana Square, it's Shops of LeVere's. And the shopping center adjoins the community, and you have to get in your car to visit the shopping center, which is appalling. It's just appalling. And if at least there could be a sidewalk alongside the road that is connecting, that would be a huge step in the right direction. So I agree with that.
I know exactly what you're talking about, Ms. Schultz.
Then you can gather up all the shopping carts at the end of the week that are in the community.
Okay, anything else from the public? Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, good afternoon. Scott Wilcox with Whiteford Taylor Preston, representing Huber Property. I have to profess, like Mr. Tracy, my voice is kind of going, so I wasn't at the Phillies game, though. I didn't have that benefit. So I'll try to be brief. My client's property is located across from the current rezoning, and we do oppose this rezoning. We oppose the rezoning for basically three reasons. Currently, in the area that was approved or close to being approved, almost 730,000 square feet of commercial, retail, and office space. There is no need for additional commercial space in this area. The area just cannot sustain this level of growth, even though it is in a growth area designated by the county. Number two, on the plus comments attached to the land use recommendation, it seems that there may be still outstanding DLDOT issues, although the plan seems like they may have been resolved at this point. And three, I don't believe this project is appropriate under the rezoning standards. As I noted and is noted on page four of the department's recommendation on this plan dated October 18th of 2011, there are a number of major commercial developments in this area. The Shops at Boyd's Corner has 13,500 square feet of commercial space. Boyd's Corner Shopping Center has 12,877. My client's property is 120,000 square feet. And then, of course, we've got Bayview Crossing. Bayview Crossing has 27,000. Then we've got Bayberry, which adds another 560,000 square feet. That total right there is 732,000 square feet of property. You add this property into it, you have almost three quarters of the size of what Christiana Mall, commercial space is all. This area just doesn't have the capability of sustaining that type of commercial growth. My clients are experiencing it now and trying to get tenants in their property. Other properties which already have approved plans are experiencing it. There just is not that type of commercial growth in this area. As I noted, the plus comments on the DLDOT recommendation seems to indicate from the comments there, and they may have been resolved, so forgive me, but it says presently there's a denial of access line across the property frontage along US Route 13. What that means is now you're going to inundate the residential roads with that commercial traffic, or you're going to have to do the interconnectivity, which you've talked about, and now you're getting the traffic is going primarily through a residential community or on residential roads, which is going to burden those roads. And I don't believe that matter has been resolved, and as Councilman Bell has been fighting with this council for many years on some of his residential roads, it's just tough. It's creating too many traffic and accident problems to be appropriate, and that issue should be resolved. I think also, if you look at the land use comments, recommendations for this, I think they bring up a number of great points as far as whether this rezoning is appropriate. First, under the consistency with the comp plan, they note the Boyd's Corner Farm is located at one of the most important challenging intersections of the C&D Canal, including Route 1 and Route 13. And it goes on to talk about the level of the amount of square footage of commercial development already there. It is already a challenging section of this county, and now you're going to add on to that approximately another 140,000 square feet of commercial property usage. Under consistency with the character of the neighborhood, it notes this area is predominantly residential. It is a growth area. It's in a growth area for residential. And we see that by Bayberry and the other portion of this development. It's predominantly residential, and that although there is development there, it's low-density commercial and commercial. It's been approved for many, many years. My client's property has been approved for over 10 years now. This isn't new. And we're not trying to exclude, as the applicant suggested, exclude the property. It was noted at the time my client's property was rezoned that was appropriate at that time. With even the growth and the development of Route 1, that was going to kind of tax the area. And you have to recognize that this is going to continue to tax that area. Under the suitability of the property for the uses which it's proposed, again, this is a residential area. What they're proposing in the other portion of the rezoning is to make it commercial. The commercial just is not suited for the Boyd's Corner US 13 area. And then, of course, the effects on the neighboring property. That's why my client is most opposed to that. This area is right now is saturated with commercial use. And to add another 140,000 square feet is just going to make it even worse. And although I appreciate the comments that were made by members of council about trying to get back to the home kind of living where everything is within walking distance and we can drive it, that's understood and appreciated by my clients also. However, if you do too much, you're not helping anybody. And that's what I think this is going to do. So we're going to take it over the top. With the Bayberry, we're at over 700,000 square feet. Think about that, how large that is. And to add another 140,000 square feet, for what reason? We don't know if that area can even sustain that type of commercial growth. Sure, the infrastructure can do it, but is it going to be a valuable asset to the county? And this is a rezoning. You as council have to now change the law or the comp plan. So it doesn't have to be approved just because it makes subdivision and development sense. Does it mean it makes logical sense? And that's what the question is. Does this make logical sense for that area, even though it's designated as a growth area? Based upon what this council and what the current zoning is already in the area. Those are my comments. I appreciate it. Any questions, I'll be happy to answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions to the speaker? Council President?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wilcox, walking through the page 5 of the recommendation report, you address some of these issues, consistency with the UDC, character of the neighborhood. The land use, Department of Land Use and the Planning Board went through these and found that they did, meet the requirements. I guess when we consider a rezoning, we have to consider those same requirements. And, I heard, concerns that might be overburdened with commercial along Route 13 or inconsistent. But, are you telling us that the Planning Board and Land Use Department recommendations are wrong in those respects or in a particular respect?
Well, I'm not suggesting anybody's wrong. Obviously, they've done a lot more research and have been more involved in this project than I have. But what I would focus on, or ask you to focus on, is look at some of the recommendations. There's a recognition in those, under each one of those, where this project doesn't meet the requirements. In particular, when you refer to, they talk about that this is predominantly a residential area. Sure, there's commercial development in the area, but that doesn't mean that you can pile on simply because the comp plan has identified this as a growth zone. What does that mean? What type of growth is too much? So I think they've applied the standards in a stagnant fashion without an appreciation of a recognition of what the additional square footage is going to do to the area based upon what's there already. And they don't have that appreciation because they're not in my client's position. My client is out there trying to solicit tenants to lease property. And whether it's a growth area or not, that doesn't mean the tenants are going to come. So it may be appropriate in the subdivision context, but in reality, it just is not appropriate.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
I guess, is there any part of your argument which says that the considerations in the report don't adequately consider the approved but not yet developed properties? Because if there are approved yet undeveloped properties and we're comparing this to what's existing there now, is that part of your argument as well? Or?
No, I think they do a great job of recognizing all the current approved property out there, and then they come to a conclusion that this property for some reason is going to be appropriate. And I think you're kind of getting the cart before the horse. They recognize what's out there, and they come to a conclusion that seems to be opposite to what the narrative prior to that states. If you like, in each section, it seems like they identify what is currently there, what is currently intended, whether it's residential or otherwise, and they come to a one sentence conclusion. I'm not sure how they got from what's out there to why this is appropriate, other than using terms such as this is the new community. The new community growth area, this is a growth area on Del-Out standards, infrastructure is presently there. Again, that doesn't answer the question practically. That puts terms to it saying it's appropriate. And I just don't see the justification for it, but thank you.
Okay, anything else from the public? Okay, move on.
Mr. Chair, if I could. As I'm perusing the report, I just had a question I'd like to direct at the applicant, if I could. In the second page of the report, there's a little section from State Historic Preservation Office where they talk about possible archaeological sites, but they also say there might be cemetery sites as well. I wonder if you could comment on that?
That's a fairly standard comment, particularly when you get south of the canal. A lot of these big farm properties may or may not have had cemeteries on them, so they're making you aware that that potential exists. They're directing you to the statutes that you that directs what you're supposed to do if, in the unlikely event that you encounter something like that, how you're supposed to handle it and what you're supposed to do. To my knowledge, none of our clients who've developed in that area have ever run into that, but I have seen that comment in almost every one of the reports on that.
Well, I would just say I hope there's some attention to making sure there are none, and if we do, we have a way to handle that under law, I suppose.
There is, and we invited it on the original plus. They asked for permission to go out on the property, and we had given our consent to go out on the property back in 2010 or whenever this was to the state folks. It was pretty much a dead issue. I wanted to use that line in court one time when someone wanted to exhume a body, and I was talked out of it.
Yeah.
And that's a story I can save for another day. Thank you.
Okay. Moving on. Ordinance number 12-019. It's revised, previously approved, preliminary plan and UDC rezoning for Columbia Place. At Garden of Eden Road. Councilman Weiner.
Thank you. This plan is an update, as previously stated by the chairman, of a plan of record. And the Land Use Department erred on the side of the community in applying and interpreting the strict interpretation clause of the code so that the community has an opportunity to both speak at the planning board and again at the time of this hearing today, and then again at council. I'm pleased that the Land Use Department did this. As you can see, the revised preliminary plan changes are in many ways positive from the community's point of view. Road eliminated, an open space was added, townhouses reconfigured to create additional open space, clubhouse shifted and garden area added, entrance shifted to save specimen space. So all those are positives. Having said that, I'm pleased that the community has been well represented, and we have a not only the applicant here, Jerry Heisler, but also Frank Matterick, who's ably chaired the Citizens Study Working Group residents that live both in the Tavistock and Eden Ridge communities, and I look forward to hearing from both of them today.
Okay. Marshall, you'd like to get up and explain anything? Or?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of County Council. My name is Jerome Heisler, the managing manager of the Raywalk Group. I'm here before you today to explain this plan. Because of strict conformity in the UDC, a plan that goes through the rezoning process, if the department deems there's been some type of change that meets materiality, we have to come through again. This is a real simple change. We've done basically two things. We've eliminated a road, which you see on this plan. By the way, this is the preliminary plan that was approved, and this is the revised plan. The area of interest is down here, and you'll see two buildings over here, and there's a little area with a roadway right there. We eliminated the roadway, creating more open space, and we kept the unit count identical. So all we did was make a little rearrangement of the lots, not increasing any dwelling unit at all, so it's identical to what it was in this plan, and eliminating the road, nothing more. There was opposition at the planning board for this plan. It's hard to believe, but there was. And the opposition was based on the fact there wasn't a new traffic impact study, or we would create traffic concerns, drainage concerns, and some other issues. They weren't really germane to the plan or the evaluation here, because we actually were creating less impervious surface, which is hard to believe there's a storm drainage problem, but we created less impervious surface, more green surface, which is good, and the same dwelling unit count. Personally, not part of this zoning, I'm not sure you should be taking plans that have this de minimis of an impact through the process again. It really turns people off and isn't a positive incentive to do development in New Castle County. So I ask County Council after the November elections to possibly reconsider what is a threshold for coming through the process. Even though the members of land use were really great to me in processing the plan, I'm not sure you want to drag somebody on a 3-month or 4-month expedition for such a small change. That's just my opinion. Any questions? If you want me to go up there and point it out real quick, I can.
Council President?
I guess to follow up on Mr. Heisler's statements, I don't know if we have a comment from land use, and I appreciate the applicant not blaming land use, but what was the trigger on what they did in these modifications that would have forced this to go through the rezoning process? I mean, what exactly is the trigger, and if there is something that needs to be fixed or maybe could be at least examined, what would that be?
David Carver, General Manager. Actually, under the enhanced review process that was adopted for the two-step process, it says general compliance, so it gives us, I think, a little more leniency when we look at these type of plans. But when we look back at the original UDC and its conformity, basically the whole idea was what you show to council is what you get. And it's really a judgment call. As far as what Mr. Heisler pointed out, we obviously support more green space, but by changing a road configuration, it did change what was shown to council at that time, so that plan technically did not strictly conform to what was shown to council. And there was some reconfiguration of some of the units by spinning them to have a different frontage. Overall, the outer limits, and I said we debated this quite a bit internally, the outer limits of the plan, the number of units, everything else remains the same. It actually is probably a better plan. If we saw this plan originally, we would still come to the same conclusion that it was an appropriate rezoning. But because that language is in there for plans basically from 1998 through 2009, 2010, we basically think that they need to come back to the process. You saw the same exact situation at the last council meeting on a Vantage Point at Hocassin, which was an approved rezoning for a nursing home that made some very minor changes of the footprint. But again, when you go back to that strict conformity, and we look at those plans, we feel that we are on the side of caution. We send them back to council, because if council had that question originally, would they have voted in the same manner? And that's starting to make the Department of Land Use try to justify legislative intent, and it makes it very dangerous. So we think we have a little more attitude in today's standards, that if we saw a better plan that is still keeping the outer limits and everything basically the same and adding more green space, we would probably have said, okay, just continue in the process. But because of the strict conformity and what the department has done over the last 10 years, we are on the side of caution, and we send these plans back through to prevent any other future challenges of either what action of the Land Use Department or the County Council.
My request is, though, that there are enough plans over the last 10 years that maybe we need to reach in and give the department that latitude for general conformity rather than strict conformity, because those plans are going to come back through the process at some point again with improvements or reconfiguration of stormwater because of new regulations, and to run them through a process like this over 3, 4, or 5 months is... Again, the department couldn't have been more gracious. I'm a big supporter of the department. Everybody knows that. But they're put in an awkward situation to make that call.
It puts us in an interesting dilemma, as Mr. Hessler said, because we now have about 12 years of history of rezonings going through. And we do notice, and this council discusses it every time we have a deed restriction change, time moves on, the use was appropriate for that change. Now you may have some modifications or other development on that site, do you need to run it back to that parcel, or do we let the time lapse, saying it's been 5 or 10 years, it's been a successful project, it's time for them to do upgrades or changes? Do we now say, okay, you're zoned commercial, the rezoning history is done, let's go forward? And that's probably a discussion we need to have, and it's one of the discussions I think we're going to be bringing forward probably the next several months as we start to implement some of the other ideas in the comprehensive plan on once it's zoned, once we have a history on that site, once it's built and operational, time marches on, we have a new type of businesses, new types of uses, we have to acknowledge that on the zoning classifications also.
So to follow up, hypothetically, if this was a plan 2010 and on, and it was approved, and they were making these changes, would you feel that they would have to go through the rezoning process again?
Yeah, because we're looking at that and we're saying that's not in strict conformity to what was approved before, but that's in general compliance with what this council saw. In fact, the changes, as we even said in our recommendation report, makes this a better plan because it's less impervious, it's less feet for people to maintain, and it actually gives them a better walking green, which are features that we're encouraging in subsidization plans. It actually makes it a better plan, just not the plan you originally saw. So
and to make it clear for the record, if this was a plan 2010 and on, it wouldn't have had to go back through this process then.
No, we would have thought that would have been within the general compliance of what council adopted.
Now you have different types of plans, and you're trying to incentivize people to go through the process.
And I'm just trying to understand, if a plan of 2010 and on didn't have to go through this process, does it make sense to require older plans to meet a different standard than modern plans?
That's what my question is about. I'm sorry to be
wrong. I picked up on that.
Okay, Councilor Carter, did you have your hand up?
Yes.
A couple ahead of you, though. I just want to make sure. I'd just like to say one thing. We got it up on the screen. We had a meeting today electronically, and this is the direction we're going with. The papers that Mr. Heisler handed out were because we didn't know how this was going to turn out up on the screen, but Jim Boyle blew it up to 50% to where you can see each section. If he moves it over, you'll see the old one and then you'll see the new one. But this is the direction we're headed. So if you want to print it out in the future, you'll be printing it out on your own. I believe we have Councilman Weiner.
Thank you. Just a few observations. I concur with all the remarks that have been said all along. Just for clarification's sake, this is not a rezoning. This is simply a revised preliminary plan. Secondly, the genesis of this 1998 rule, and I served on council at the time, was the Burnie 1 Town Center, the Rollins Project. And prior to that, there was another extreme in council, and that was what was perceived by the general community as a bait and switch. You would do a zoning, you could show a pretty picture, and then when you went to record subdivision, it could be completely different. What we instituted at the time in 1998, having that institutional history, was the subdivision plan and was merged with the rezoning, so that what you got was what you saw was what you got. And the next and last point I want to make is, for those of us on this plan, it may be very easy for us to say, well, this is obviously better. But sometimes what's obviously better may be a very subjective decision. Rollins could have said, well, it's obviously better for us to move things around and do something different. Whereas the community would have said, well, it's not obviously better, and this is different, and this was a bait and switch. So, again, I want to go back and applaud the Land Use Department for erring on the side of the community, because beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And although this one is intuitively obvious, when you change a law based upon a specific circumstance, sometimes that doesn't make a good law change, because you've got a very narrow focus. You're not looking at something broadly.
Councilman Powers.
This question to you, Jerry. Why, and maybe you said it earlier and I might have missed it, why are you making the changes now?
Yeah.
That's really a good question, Councilman.
Well, I mean, it's
right. That's what I'm sitting here thinking.
And again, this isn't a reflection on the land use, it's a reflection on the UDC process. You're going to approve a plan in about 60 days called Lincoln Center. About 6 months after we had it approved, we actually came up with a better design for it. But to go through the process all the way over again would delay that plan and take more time. We had this design. You see things as you go through the process, and we saw this as we were getting to the end of preliminary approval. But it's too late to make that change. And when you get approved for a zoning, you're frozen in time. You don't have the flexibility to make improvements to a plan with the UDC. You have to run it through all the way again. So
just...
You know, basically, the process is so rigid and so inflexible and does not allow for tinkering. I'm not talking about material bait and switch type deals, but tinkering to improve the plan as you're going through and you see things because of stormwater management issues and everything else, you can't do it. So when we submit that plan in the beginning of the process, we're basically frozen in time.
But did you have stormwater management problems?
No.
We just came up with... But what I have to say, I mean, with the rezoning and being in a district being rezoned, Councilman Bell probably will agree, is the community looks at the rezoning and saying this is what it's going to be.
Right.
Totally. Now, as soon as you say, let's go to land use and they can make this change, then all of a sudden it's a deal with these guys, mm-hmm. you know, that nobody in the community likes. Even though it's right, I mean, not that much. And you thinking from your end, but think out of the box from the other side. And I
have, but the issue becomes if I'm not making a dwelling unit count change, and all I'm doing, and I've had this happen in Meridian Crossing, by the way, the same thing. If you're not making road alignment changes, you're frozen in time. You essentially have to go through the process again, and we're tinkering off and on with that. In Meridian Crossing, if I make a property line change that affects a road alignment and doesn't affect one dwelling unit, I have to go through the whole process again. So if I can make a better plan, it's going to end up costing me $25,000. I personally don't think the people of Route 40 really care about that. They really care about traffic generation, school impact, storm drainage. But in here, I'm making a positive impact. Again, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, but I get drugged through the process. And the problem is, we need a balance here that's going to incentivize people to make positive changes to plans. I'm not saying I should not go through the process if I start adding dwelling units. Then I need to go through the process. But I haven't done that here.
Looking at commercial or industrial, I can tell you right now, and we need industrial properties.
We do.
In the county, but people don't like them next to them. So whatever's on that plan, it's got to be on that plan, whatever deed restrictions, to take care of the community at the time. You can't come back and change it in land use. They're going to have to bring it back to take care of the property.
But I'm not changing a deed restriction here.
I understand.
And then the other...
I'm just with what you're asking... I understand what you're saying, but you got to look at it as general, yeah. as the whole.
Well, the other problem is, and I've lost, I do industrial space and commercial space. I've lost potential tenants because of the length of the process when you have to go through something like this. So one of the challenges for this council is to figure out how you can get somebody in and out in 8-10 weeks.
I'm not disagreeing. Councilman Bell and I have said that's the reason everything's moving in Middletown.
That's right. That's correct. And as long as we take, you know, 16 and 25 weeks to get plans through, or 24 weeks, and that's considered fast compared to the last time, we are still not competitive compared to other municipalities. And we need to do something about that. This process started, I think, when did it start? In February, Dave? Dave? Yeah. And it'll be June, early July before it gets finished.
Councilman Cartier.
Yeah, I think, your concerns are duly noted by me, and I just want to, say that I'm perusing the revised plan, you saving a specimen tree and taking away some road surface and, made some, shifted the entrance a little bit. So it does seem like, pretty small changes. I would say that as a person who probably be facing some serious issues with a site in the near term, that having a standard of that prevents a bait and switch is really important. And where the threshold is, we're going to have to maybe ease that on the margin. But I've got a site in Claymont that has very strict architectural controls and other features, and community went through lengthy processes buying into those, and now potential new ownership wanting to do things. I'm very glad that there is a process in place to prevent any modifications without council's approval and department review and so forth. So, there are many sides to this issue. As one who serves people and as an elected official, a bait and switch is not where we want to go at all. We don't want to go back to the bad practices of the past. And I just want to compliment Councilman Weiner for whatever modifications were made to prevent that kind of thing. So it's an art trying to create a series of requirements that give flexibility but protect the interests of the public when it comes to development.
Councilman Smiley?
Yeah. Because we are on the record, because this will be on the website, I'm going to clarify Mr. Heisler's comment that this council will be approving the Lincoln Center in 60 days. I think he hopes the council will be approving the Lincoln Center down on Route 7, and there has been no quid pro quo or anything related to the Lincoln Center.
That is my hope as well.
Thank you for clarifying that, sir.
Nothing is given.
Anything else from council? I'd just like to say that I agree with what was said here with all the speakers on council about how it was reviewed and precautions. Yeah. The precautions of the bait and switch, but this is not a bait and switch because it was already observed by the councilman and land use. Anything from the public? Yes, ma'am.
Amy Schultz. I live in Pike Creek Valley. I had a question originally when this project was proposed about sidewalks going out to the main drag, and I wondered if anything had worked out about that situation.
Is that the original view?
Jerome Heisler again. There's a sidewalk in front of our property. I'm not sure it extends beyond that, but if it's possible, we'll put it in. It's not that much of a length. There's no sidewalk on the other side. I think is the Wawa going to have sidewalk on its southern boundary? So on the JCC side, along the JCC perimeter, there's no sidewalk.
You've put sidewalk in front of everything that belongs to you.
Oh, yes, that's a requirement. We have that in there.
Yeah, there's still a little length that doesn't have
there's sidewalk. A section basically from the JCC boundary line or where it would be across the road to Route 202 where there isn't. There's a single family dwelling, the entrance to the apartments, and then the gas station.
Yeah, just to follow up, as Ms. Schultz had stated, I had also asked Mr. Heisler before if he could graciously budget in to continue the sidewalk, and he said the same thing he just said now, and that was if it's possible he would do that, and you can't ask for anything more. It's not his property, but considering this is going to be a community of older folks, and you've got all the families across the street and buses and other places that people would want to visit, it would be a great amenity to have a sidewalk there. And having said that, I give all due deference and respect to certain areas where sidewalks don't make sense, but if there's ever a sensible sidewalk, it's Garden of Eden Road out to the corner of Concord Pike.
That's true. Okay, anything else from the public?
Frank Matterick. I'm with the working group, as Bob said, of the Tavistock Eden Ridge group. I came today not expecting to speak. And if you do have any questions about the community viewpoints, I'd be glad to answer any questions. I would just Jerry Heisler and I have had so many phone calls together, so many meetings together, so many coffees together. I consider him Jerry, and not Mr. Heisler, Mr. Rebold. We even share a number of away from Wilmington activities that we go on vacation on. So I've got to know him very well. We've had this same discussion a number of times. Jerry and I have differing memories, but the first time this project was brought to the attention of the community was in June of 2008, 4 years ago. And in selling his proposal and seeking cooperation from us, he repeated time and time again, strict conformity, what you see is what you're going to get, strict conformity. And so he has created the monster within us.
Any questions to the speaker? Okay, anything else?
Motion to adjourn.
Hold on.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Kristen Dwyer, Executive Office. I just wanted to update briefly council on the property tax amnesty program. It concluded on May 31st, and we were able to help approximately 231 property owners reconcile delinquent accounts with Newcastle County and the school districts. And in the end, 373,000 property taxes were collected, delinquent property taxes were collected for the school districts, with about 75,000 in penalties abated and 88,000 in county taxes were paid, and about 15,000 in penalties were abated. So I will be sending along an email that kind of breaks it out even further beyond those numbers to each of you. But you'll probably see a press release coming out.
Are you done?
Councilor Street, you have your hand up. I just want to thank Mr. Harrison for bringing the CD in for this, and Jim Boyle, been doing a lot of work on this, and we're not done yet, but we're started. Any public comment? Okay.
We're done now. Motion
adjourned. Second. Thank you.
The problem's going to be, I almost said this on the tape, the problem's going to be, I said strict conformity, that's why it's got